and you're listening to me.
Oh, how true.
A man who defies any adjective to describe him. He's Fred Allen in person.
Thank you. Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Now, where's that joke, Harry?
Well, Fred, I wrote
a joke on my cuff.
I wrote a joke on my cuff last Thursday,
Harry. This is the same shirt. Now, I've got to start off like Bob Hope with joke after joke.
He has started a trend.
Velocity is the thing, here it is, Harry. I've got it. It was up my sleeve. As so many people on my cuff, the joke got up my sleeve to make way. But a funny thing happened coming to the studio tonight, Harry. Of course, it was unfortunate. Nothing funny happened when I got to the studio, but on the way. But coming downtown in the subway tonight, Harry, a man got on at 61st Street. Now, as we know, there is no subway station at 61st Street, so I knew instantly something was wrong. And got on, so I turned to the man and I said, "Do you realize that you just got on at 61st Street and there's no subway station there?" And the fella said, "Boy, do I need glasses." And then there was the Italian sitting in the corner who spoke up.
Fred.
Look, Fred. Get away, Harry. You bother me.
No. Fred, I think you better go into the news.
Well, look, I've got two more jokes, Harry, and then I'm up
well,
to my...
Well, no, Fred. But, no. You know what happens every week.
Nothing,
now.
I know, but don't brag about it, Harry.
No, the thing that happens, the show is too long, and we have to cut off the end of the program every week.
I know, but we have a man.
Well, if you don't stop talking now, we'll be late again.
Look, I was only going to tell the one about the two bookworms who were eating their way through the calendar. And when they came, the bookworms were eating their way through the calendar. And when they came to October, one bookworm turned to the other and said, "That's fall, brother."
Well, Fred, wait a minute.
You stepped on a left. Now, may not be around for 10 minutes, but keep your leg up in case it... all right, Harry, I won't tell any more. I only had one more. The old hokey pokey.
The one about
the Englishman who was so cross-eyed, he wore his monocle in his ear.
No, don't bother.
I'm glad you tipped me off. I was going to tell it, but the way it went, I'm glad I didn't. If I haven't got time to tell any jokes, Harry, I may as well bring you folks the latest news of the week. The IPANA News presents The World in Review. New York City, New York. Starting April 2nd, the 16th decennial census taken in this country got underway. 120,000 enumerators, schooled in tabulation and courtesy, attempted to question 132 million Americans to furnish data for Uncle Sam. First week of census finds many taxpayers bewildered. Many people do not even know the origin of the census in this country. The first question generally asked is,
who started the census?
And the answer is...
the country's first president, George Washington.
Oh, yeah? Well, how did he come to start it?
Well, George Washington and Benjamin Franklin were joking about the census one day.
Yeah?
Franklin said to Washington, "George, you can't take it."
And?
Washington won.
And that is why census figures to this day are still sent to Washington. Back in 1790, the first census taker in this country knocked on the first door at Mount Vernon.
Yes?
I'm the census taker, madam. Your name?
Martha Washington.
Business?
Candy maker.
I'll take a pound of the mixed chocolate.
Will you take them with you?
No, I'll eat them here.
Come in.
10 years later, in 1800, the census taker knocked again.
Yes?
I'm the census taker. Your name?
John Quincy Adams.
Which one are you?
I'm Adams.
Where are the other two boys?
Come in.
History doesn't tell us whether he met the other two boys or not. In 1810, America heard...
I'm the census taker.
1820...
I'm the census taker.
1830...
I'm the milkman.
Oh, now, wait. Wait a minute. You're supposed to be the census taker.
I am the census taker.
What are you doing selling milk?
I got a sideline.
Who knows about 1840? And so it has gone on every 10 years for the last 150 years. Today, the latest 1940 census is now underway. IPANA News questions random passers-by to learn how census is progressing. First, a little-known census enumerator, Philbert Smith. How is the census going, Mr. Smith?
Don't talk census to me. I'm disgusted.
Why?
I don't know. I'm just unlucky, I guess. I must have been born under a black cat or something. I'm disgusted.
You look as though you could have been born under a black cat. They threw the wrong one away, obviously. Well, if you're disgusted, excuse me, Mr. Smith. I didn't mean to interrupt there. It was for a worthy cause, as it developed. What happened?
Well, things was tough.
Really?
Finally, I grabbed off this census job.
Mm-hmm.
It's life and death. I gotta make good.
What did you do?
Well, first I go to school to perfect my approach.
To learn manners?
Yeah, you know, that etiquette stuff. Not to lean on a dame while you're talking to her. Yeah. Not to put your hands in nobody's pockets while you're taking their census.
Yes. You have to work for the tax department to do that. You finish the census instruction.
Yeah, they give me my first assignment. It's a Polish neighborhood.
Oh, you went down to the Polish section.
Yeah, I'm walking down the street. I happen to sneeze. 20 families open their doors.
Thought you were paging them, huh?
Yeah.
You go ahead. I'll explain them as you go. Well, what happened, Mr.?
Well, I stop at the first house. It's a dame.
Yeah?
Her name is Dobolenka Smicky Wacky Wachowski.
Dobolenka Smicky Wacky Wachowski.
Yeah, I'm stuck. I can't spell it. I asked the dame. She can't spell it.
Yes?
I wait around till the father comes home to lunch. He can't spell it.
I see.
I sit around all afternoon till the sister comes home from the box factory. She can't spell Schmicky Wacky Wachowski neither. I ain't getting no place.
A dilemma indeed.
Yeah, I'm desperate.
Yeah.
Bang! I finally gets me an idea. I says, put on your snoot, sister. You're coming with me.
And you took the girl down to the census office?
No, I took her out and married her.
You married her? Why?
Well, nobody can spell Schmicky Wacky Wachowski, and my name is Smith.
Oh, so that's...
Certainly, I write Mrs. Smith on a census blank and go on about my business.
Devilishly, diabolically clever, I will say. And I am not compelled to at this juncture. Have you any advice, Mr. Smith? Have you any advice to give a young man starting out in the census game?
Yeah. Learn to spell. If I could spell, I'd still be single.
Condolences. And thank you, Phil. You want to come back for a bow? And thank you, Philbert Smith. Two boys, you might as well take a bow. You might be taking census in a tunnel tomorrow, and the flexibility of the spine is not to be overlooked in later life, as you will learn. Two boys who gave the census taker some trouble at the circus were Mo and Joe. Is that right, boys?
Yeah. We are still laughing.
What happened, fella?
We are Siamese twins with the circus. Matinees every day, plenty of seats, no waiting.
No commercial, boys. What about the census?
Well, first, to get into Zias, they are charging the census taker a quarter.
That burned him up, huh?
He is so hot under the collar, the fire eater is snapping at him.
I see.
Next, he is asking, you were born twins?
What was that? What was he asking?
Next, he is asking, you were born twins?
First time you boys slipped up since you were born, I guess. Well, what did you answer when he asked you if you were born twins?
We said, yeah. Our mother was frightened by a double feature.
Very, very good. What was his next question?
He is asking our occupation. We are giving him a hot one.
What occupation did you give him?
We told him we are joiners.
Yeah, I am joined to Mo.
And I am joined to Joe. Ha, ha.
Well, what did the census taker say to that?
He says, what is this, collusion?
Uh-huh.
He said, yeah, there is something between us.
And then?
Then he says, I don't see the connection.
So?
We are showing it to him.
Well, thanks a lot. You shouldn't have taken it out just for that, fellas. Well, thanks a lot, boys.
So long.
You fellas are certainly happy.
Yeah, we always leave us laughing when we say goodbye.
Well, thank you, Mo and Joe. Thank you. And now, in response to many requests that have not been sent in, asking our house trio, the Sad Max, to dedicate a song to the census enumerators, the Sad Max sing for you their tribute to the census taker. Okay, boys.
A one and a two and a
who takes care of the census taker census when the census taker's busy taking census? Gee, oh, gosh, oh, gee. It's bothering Nifty. We know that the census taker must come through. But while he's taking you, he must be taken too. So who takes care of the census taker census when the census taker's busy taking census? At 4 cents a head.
Records, records of this number may be purchased at your local rummage sale. And now the double-decker record company is putting out the number. You get a sandwich combined with this number you've just heard. And now the Merrimax sing a song that deals with the downfall of a young man in a roulette palace. The number is called Ezekiel Saw the Wheel.
Ezekiel saw the wheel way in the middle of the air. Little wheel run by faith, the big wheel run by the grace of God. Just wheeling a wheel way in the middle of the air. Ezekiel saw the wheel way up in the middle of the air. Ezekiel saw the wheel.
Thank you tonight. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we set out to prove once and for all that the phrase, beautiful but dumb, does not apply to every pretty girl you meet. And we have chosen for our experiment Miss Barbara Terrell. Well, Miss Terrell, we can see that you're pretty. It's for you to show us that you're pretty smart, too.
Well, for instance, my teeth used to be so bright and sparkling that I never figured they needed any special care. But one day I noticed that my teeth weren't so bright anymore. Later, I found pink on my toothbrush.
Thank you, Peter Van Steeden, and it's up to the minute, man. I've just played for you their digest version of Darktown Strutter's Ball. And now our guest in the... Oh!
Hello!
Oh, excuse me, I nearly shut you off, didn't I? Well, hello, you want to take it again? And now our guest tonight...
Hello!
Nothing happens either way. Well, yeah? Don't tell me you brought your gang with you tonight. Hello, Portland. What are you doing with that red balloon?
Well, I just came back from the circus.
Well, I'd have taken your word for it. You didn't have to bring along that balloon.
Oh, I didn't buy it. It was a present.
No kidding.
Uh-huh. I met Georgie Jessel. He was buying a red balloon for his girlfriend. So he bought one for me.
Well, isn't that nice? Yes, Georgie's doing very well these days. They tell me Jessel has saved up so much money, he can afford to work with Cantor again.
Yes, I read that they're going to be at the Capitol pretty soon.
Yes, Cantor will be at the Capitol. Jessel will be at Cantor.
Have you heard Georgie's new radio program?
Yes, but he's not on it now, I understand. The fellow who's doing it now is called Mr. District Attorney.
Well, I heard it last Thursday. It's a swell show.
Yes, and oh, so subtle, too. Did you notice? All through the program, the district attorney makes your hair stand on end. And then at the finish, the announcer comes in and tells you about a hair preparation that will get your hair back down again. But you were telling me about the circus. How is it this year?
It's wonderful. I saw everything from the pickets right through to the end of the show.
Oh, boy, the whole thing, huh?
Uh-huh. There's a man there named My Foo.
My Foo?
And I do mean Foo. That wasn't bad for me, was it?
No, and it wasn't good for you either. A joke like that will thin friends and influence people. Tell me, what does My Foo do?
He slides backwards down a tightrope from the top of Madison Square Garden.
Oh, boy, all the way down backwards, mm-hmm. Huh? If My Foo ever slips and you're sitting underneath, it might be foo on you. Well, I'm sorry I can't take up the rest of the circus with you, Portland. What about our guest?
Well, while I was in Madison Square Garden, yeah. I got to thinking.
Yeah, thinking what?
One night, Madison Square Garden is a hockey rink.
Yeah.
The next night, it's a six-day bike race or a basketball court.
Yeah.
Now, it's a circus. And our guest tonight...
Now, don't tell me he's the man who makes those phenomenal alterations in the interior appearance of Madison Square Garden overnight.
That's right. Mr. Allen, meet Mr. Richard Donapria.
Well, good evening, Mr. Donapria.
Good evening, Fred.
You are the Secretary of the Interior at Madison Square Garden. The man who works lumber magic from dusk to dawn.
I'm one of the men, Fred. I'm acting superintendent of construction under Mr. James McNally.
Well, you don't do all of that work alone, do you?
No, I have three assistants, Fred.
Well, I think in self-defense that we better mention their names, or you may have to do some explaining when you get back to work tomorrow. Now, who are your three assistants, Mr. Donapria?
Howard Post, chief engineer, Lex Hannon, chief electrician, and John Brown, head property manager.
Now we're all set. We can discuss the garden. Although why they call it a garden, I will never know. Nothing grows in there but box office receipts and cauliflower on fighters' ears. But say, during the season there, you stage a great variety of shows, don't you?
Yes, we put on about every type of athletic contest and public attraction that can be held indoors.
With the alterations you have to make for the different shows, you ought to know more about quick changes than the mother of quadruplets. What is your first big show? Let it go, Mr. Donapria. What is your first big show of the season each year?
The Rodeo, Fred. It opens in October.
Do you have to alter the garden greatly to get the wide open spaces indoors?
No. Our biggest job with the Rodeo is covering the floor of the garden with dirt.
Where do you get the dirt? You don't just go out on 8th Avenue and invite people to track it in, do you?
No, we get it from a contractor. We use about 600 tons.
600 tons of dirt. Well, where does the contractor get it?
We keep it on a lot on 11th Avenue. He has 800 tons of dirt over there.
He's filthy with it, huh? So seldom you meet a man who's got dirt. But after the road day, I'm going to over there with a shovel tomorrow and put the bee on that guy just for a shovel. But after the rodeo, what is the garden's next big attraction?
The horse show, Fred. That comes in November.
Well, the horse show is just the rodeo with a collar on, isn't it? What do? Call up that dirt man again and say, shoot the gravel to me, John boy?
It isn't that easy, Fred. For the horse show, we need special dirt.
Well, dirt is dirt, isn't it?
The dirt we use for the horse show was sifted and run through a magnetic separator to take out loose nails and pieces of metal.
What are those horse show horses so picky about? You'd think they were going to take their shoes off and run around the garden in their stocking feet. Well, all right, after the horse show is over and the amateur riders are back home wishing they could sit down again, what happens around the garden?
Then our busy season starts. We have hockey Tuesday, basketball Wednesday, and Thursday we have hockey again.
And Friday at the garden is fight night, of course.
That's right.
I was going to slip a commercial in there.
That's right. And on Saturday, we might have a track meet, dog show, policeman's ball, or a six-day bicycle race.
Well, don't you sometimes feel frustrated and say to yourself, Mr. Donaprio, what is the use of it all?
How do you mean, Fred?
Well, you take Joe Louis's last fight. No, fight isn't the word. Wait a minute. Take Joe's last meeting with Mr. Paycheck. You work like a dog, putting seats around on the floor of the garden, setting up the ring. You finish working, you sit down to relax. Mr. Lewis and Mr. Paycheck shake hands, bang, it's over, and you've got to tear the joint apart again.
Why should I complain, Fred? That's my job.
I get it. Joe Louis deposits. He's his paycheck, and so do you. Well, let's say the fight is over, and the next night you have a hockey game. Now, how do you make a jiffy rink? Do you send out for some jumbo ice cubes?
We don't have to send out. The garden is equipped to make its own ice. We have a network of freezing pipes under the floor.
Have you ever turned it on too quickly and come in the next morning to find the NYU basketball team frozen in the middle of your hockey rink?
No, we never start the freezing system until the crowd is out.
How long does it take you to put a coating of ice over that huge floor?
The first spray of water is put on about 2 o'clock in the morning. And the rink can be used at 9 a.m.
Well, suppose you have a softball game the next night. How do you get the place defrosted? Now, you don't skim over the ice personally wearing a pair of hot skates, do you?
No, defrosting is easy, Fred. We just pump a warm solution through the pipes and the ice melts. Then we break it up with plows and it goes down the drain.
Do you save the water to rent to the motorboat show when it opens?
No, once we've used the water, we're through with it.
Well, I guess an ice rink melted down wouldn't be much good anyway. Full of hockey players' ears and kneecaps. But tell me, what is the most unusual thing you've had to construct, ever had to construct in the garden?
We put up a ski slide 2 seasons ago. It was 75 feet high.
Where did you get the snow? Don't tell me that guy with the 800 tons of dirt has a snow pile on 11th Avenue, too.
No, we make our own snow.
Well, how can you make snow?
We run 500 tons of ice through a machine that breaks it up into little chips.
And when you dismantle the ski slide, it's goodbye. Is that Eagle back in again? What? But tell me, Mr. Donapria, you've got the circus in the garden now, doesn't it? Listen, we were in a position to do some business with you a couple of weeks ago. We had an eagle, a loose eagle here. And I'm sorry that you didn't show up a couple of weeks sooner.
No, I'm sorry, too.
Well, I said you missed something. Tell me, you've got the circus in the garden now. Does an attraction that big present a problem for you?
No, the circus is easy. We just spread the arena with dirt, and they do the rest.
Now, before you go, one thing. Now, we live in a world that's constantly changing, but you augment your personal confusion engaging in a job that demands incessant changing, too. Now, don't you sometimes wish they'd get Madison Square Garden set and leave it alone?
No, Fred. The day they do that, I'll be out of a job.
I see your point. You're like the rest of us. You don't mind making changes for others as long as you can make a little change for yourself. Am I right?
Good night, Fred.
Good night, and thank you, Mr. Richard Donafrio. Thank you. And now, Miss Wynne Murray, who is on a diet and can't look at me because I'm so sweet, backs up to the microphone to sing. Quiet, quiet, please, quiet. That's been going on here all night. Now, quiet, quiet. Miss Wynne Murray backs up to the... backs up one of the Stebbins boys stopping a reception 20 years ago. But Miss Wynne Murray backs up to the microphone to sing Too Romantic.
I'm so afraid of night, 'cause I'm too romantic. Moonlight and stars can make such a fool of me.
Thank you. Thank you. Now the little ones, or as they're sometimes called, the kiddies, are in the news again. This time it's a class that permits no scolding, no punishment, in fact, no adult interference of any kind. The teacher hides behind a screen and merely observes the tot's behavior. So if little Willie takes a poke at little Tommy, the teacher probably just jots it down in a notebook under the head of assault and battery. That's a pretty interesting experiment, don't you think so, Harry?
Well, yes, Fred. It's all right to observe children for some things, but there are other things they have to be told. Things about their health, for example, about the proper care of their teeth and gums. That's why many modern teachers in classrooms all over the country are saying,
and don't forget, children, every time you brush your teeth, be sure you massage your gums, too.
And wise parents not only see that their children follow that sensible advice, but also follow it themselves.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the question of the week. This is Mr. and Mrs. Average Man's Round Table, where three persons selected from our studio audience are invited to give their opinions on a question that concerns some prominent issue of the day. These little sessions are entirely unrehearsed. Fred has taken his place now at the round table, where he meets his fellow debaters for the first time.
Are you ready, Fred?
Yes, Harry. Ready or not, I shall be caught. And now the forum is officially open. I put my cigar butt over here, not having been introduced to these people. In view of the times, one cannot be too safe or secure these days. Portland, if you will kindly introduce the first member of our little group.
Yes, Mr. Harry Alpert from New York City.
Good evening, Mr. Alpert.
Good evening.
May I ask your profession, business, or calling?
Well, I'm an instructor in sociology at the College of the City of New York.
Instructor in sociology?
That's right.
Well, I have nothing to say at all since you brought up sociology. But would you kindly tell us what sociology is?
Well, it's the study of the behavior of human beings in relation to other human beings.
In groups?
Yes, in groups, in society.
You concentrate on the study of groups?
That's right.
Have you studied the theater group yet?
It would be a very interesting subject of study.
I imagine it would be. But tell me, what is the... we had a group in here, the first program, Mr. Alpert. I wish you could have studied. We had a reverse din in here that went on for 60 minutes. But tell me, what is the difference between sociology and anthropology?
Well,
there is a difference, I hope, or I'm...
I would say that the anthropology is really the sociology of primitive peoples.
Oh, it's not reduced to a single man, is it?
Well, physical anthropology would be the study of the physical characteristics of the human organism.
You're over my head now, Mr. Alpert. I am not going to send for a mental coast guard to get me out of this. I don't know. What is the difference between a man and a lower animal?
Well, one, I would say there are two reasons. One is that man has a brain of considerable size. Well, how he uses it is another story.
That's right.
And the other is that man is a tool-making animal. He's a fellow who can manipulate his hands, extend them by use of tools and techniques and technology. The radio, for example.
And things like that. Yes. But, of course, when man started to develop his mind naturally, he gave up instinct and began, turned his thoughts to reason then, didn't he?
Well, he tried.
He tried. Do you think that was his undoing? Don't you think?
No, I don't. I really think that the more human beings apply rational methods and scientific thought, the better off they'll be.
Do you think man is as well adjusted to his environment as the lower animals are?
Well, it doesn't look that way from the war news that we're getting.
No, it certainly doesn't. But I often wondered why monkeys laughed at people, Mr. Alpert. Now I think I'm beginning to understand. The monkey realizes that it's as well off as a man, and it hasn't wasted 200 generations. Well, thank you a lot, Mr. Alpert. And now, Portland.
Miss Miriam Cohen from New York City.
Good evening, Miss Cohen.
Good evening.
May I ask your profession or calling or business?
Why, yes, I'm secretary to the Press Photographers Association of New York.
Secretary to the Press Photographers Association?
Yes, Mr. Allen.
I've seen a lot about them in the papers, sir, this week. They're having their ball, aren't they?
Yes, this Friday night at the Hotel Astor.
Friday? I'd like to go down and see that. I don't know whether I can or not. The press photographers, I imagine nobody will be in the hall. They'll all be outside taking each other's pictures as they come in. But have you any influence there with the press photographers?
Why, I certainly think I do
have. You do have?
Yes.
Well, could you do me a favor?
I'd be glad to.
Well, next Tuesday, Jack Benny is coming into New York City from Hollywood. And Rochester is coming in with him, of course. And Rochester is getting off at 125th Street. And naturally, the big celebration will be up there. Lenox Avenue, local boy. Makes good. And I was wondering, it's going to be awful. Jack will get in at the Grand Central all alone, nobody down there to meet him. I was wondering if you, through the press photographers, could get a little man with a candid camera to go down and meet Jack. Could you do that?
Mr. Dave Williams from New York City.
Good evening, Mr. Williams.
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
May I ask your business?
Well, I'm
not
on...
my business.
I'm on the manager's staff of the Embassy Newsreel Theater at 46th and Broadway.
The Embassy Newsreel Theater. Was the Embassy the first newsreel theater opened in this country by any chance?
Yes, it was, Mr. Allen. It's about 10 years old now.
The embassy is 10 years old, not playing the same newsreels.
No, it isn't, Mr.
Well, in about 20 years, it will be repeating itself from the looks of things. Tell me, what is the secret of the success of the newsreel theaters?
Well, there's a great many reasons for it, Fred. Perhaps I could say Lou Lair would be one.
Lou Lair?
Yes.
He would be one. There must be another reason.
Well,
he would appeal to the monkey trade, of course, and some primitive people Mr. Alpert could tell us about if we had the time. But,
well, we're looking forward to Jack Benny. Whenever he comes to town, he always seems to drop down to the embassy.
Well, he's good in the newsreels. It's those features. Anytime he makes a newsreel, I'm the first one in to see him. But when he makes a feature, he's overdoing it. They tell me they've got Benny in Technicolor in this new picture now. And with a process shot, they've got him on a horse somewhere. It's going to be interesting to see how this comes out, how they do things in Hollywood. Well, thank you, Mr. Williams. I'm sorry I haven't a chance to ask you more about Mr. Benny's success at the Embassy Theater, where I... generally, most theaters, they put Mr. Benny in most theaters when they want the place to become a parking space. The following week, Mr. Benny goes in, and automatically, he is the termite of artistry in our profession. That brings us to our question. Tonight, we take up a dictatorship. Have I got time for the question? We're awfully late. Would you say that to the people on the coast, Uncle Jim?
Yeah, sure.
Ladies and gentlemen in California, this is Uncle Jim bringing you his own message about the time problem that faces us at the moment here.
We're terribly overdue there.
Overdue where? Yeah. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I brought the whole thing up. Wait a minute now, Jim. We're not going anyplace, so how can we be overdue? You think, in other words, you think we should leave the question out?
Yeah, we're overdue with that other mic for the rest of the show.
Haven't we got an old overdue bill we can use? All right, it looks then as though we'll have to postpone the question. All right, Jim, I'm very sorry, Mr. Albert, Miss Cohen, and Mr. Williams, to have put you to all this trouble, but at the time, there are certain lunar limitations under which we function, and the man who controlled the sun isn't with us anymore. We just have to give way, huh?
He was eclipsed.
Yes, he was, years ago. Thank you, Mr. Albert, and thank you all for your kind participation. Thank you, and now the Merrimacks, ladies and gentlemen, three men and a maid, to sing for us Mr. Dewey's theme song, So Far, So Good.
So far, so good, so far, so nice, when I found you, I found the key to paradise. So far, so good, so far, so grand, me in a big romance, our hand in hand. Take a peek at the future, what do you see? Such a romantic future, for two, for you and me. So now you're...
Thank you, thank you. Nowadays, ladies and gentlemen, you can't turn on your radios without running smack dab into a lot of people answering questions in front of a lot of microphones and getting a lot of prizes for it.
Well, what kind of questions, Fred?
Oh, like, what is a popo catapetal?
Well, what is a popo...
Now, never mind. I had my trouble a few minutes ago there. Now, at the moment, it's my turn to ask. Would anyone in the studio audience care to step up here and bandy a few words? Those gentlemen coming up. Thank you, sir. Do you know a lot of answers?
Quite a few. What would you like to know?
Well, what is a Popocatépetl? Let's get that one settled first.
It's a volcano in Mexico.
It is, huh? Well, let's see now. What would you do if you met a shaloon?
It wouldn't bother me much, Mr. Allen. Shaloon is just loosely woven woolen material.
I was wondering about that. Say, now I'm running out of questions, Harry. Have you got a timely question, Harry?
Yes, I
Good.
Have, Fred.
You save the day.
Sir, what would you do with the first sign of a spring cold?
I'd put 2 teaspoonfuls of sal hepatica in a glass of water and drink it.
Mm. And why...
And now the darlings of the cut rate... the Mighty Allen Art Players. Tonight they dramatize a case taken from the clinical wastebasket of a prominent animal surgeon. It is called The Crisis in the Central Park Zoo, or The Parrot Had Yellow Jaundice. So it wasn't a big canary after all. Overture, Pietro.
Calling Dr. Allen. Calling Dr. Allen. Lion ready for tooth extraction in Ward 4. Lion waiting. Hurry, Dr. Allen.
A call for you, Dr. Allen. Lion tooth extraction.
I heard it, nurse. Get me my Novocaine and monkey wrench.
Here, doctor.
Thank you. If anyone calls the office here, I'll be in the clinic. Who's afraid of the big bad lion? He's in there crying, maybe dying. Who's afraid of the big bad lion?
Oh, good, you're just in time, doctor. Leo's in terrible pain here.
Steady, steady, steady. Steady, Leo, steady, old boy. Hold this lion's paw, keeper. I'm going to extract that, too.
All right, doctor. All right,
open wide, Leo. This isn't going to hurt a bit. Open, boy. Wider. Fine, fine. Now keep it open. Let me see which tooth is abscessed. Well, I better tap them with this monkey wrench. No, not that incisor. Isn't this bicuspid? This lower molar. Well, I'll tighten the wrench. Now we're ready. Steady. Steady, Leo. Stand this tooth in the corner, keeper.
Okay, doctor.
Pack that cavity with a burlap bag. Feed the patient on nothing but soft animals until further notice.
Yeah, okay, doctor.
I'll be in my office if you want me, keeper. Goodbye. Yeah, and if that lion doesn't take care of his teeth, I'll have to call up the highway commissioner and get him an old bridge.
Was the extract to be successful, doctor?
Yes, nurse. Sterilize this monkey wrench.
Yes, doctor.
Gad, what a day. I've run the organic gamut. Hey, an appendectomy on a boa constrictor. You can't go any lower in surgery than that. You're 4 feet down to get a purchase to wield my scalpel. That was in the forenoon. After lunch, I took out a giraffe's adenoids.
A giraffe's adenoids? How'd you ever reach up to the giraffe's head to operate?
I worked on a sterile pogo stick. Gad, I'm an animal, Dr. Kilbear.
Your name ought to be in Who's Zoo?
Thank you, nurse. And by the way, put an ad in the Times, on the front page of the Times, for a new keeper for the polecats.
Has the polecat keeper resigned?
Yes, he's getting a job at the botanical gardens, pruning roses. He feels that a year among the roses may even him out. I doubt it. Come in.
Dr. Allen, I'm a busy man.
Mayor LaGuardia.
Yes, I can only spare you 30 seconds, Allen. I'm due in Canarsie to put out a fire. I'm using milk to do it.
Milk to put out a... Milk to put out a fire?
Well, there's a water shortage, Allen. The fire department is using milk with all fires.
Milk, but how can you...
Very simple. The fire truck drives up full of cows. 4 firemen are assigned to each cow. Each fireman mans a nozzle. Cow is pointed at the fire and bingo! 100 streams of milk play on the blaze.
Mayor, that is colossal. You'll save millions of gallons of water.
Yes, that's why I'm here. I'm making a gift to the city zoo.
A stuffed alderman?
Stop with those jokes, Allen. If I want laughs, I can read over the budget.
Sorry, Your Honor. What is your gift?
It's a parrot. This parrot has been trained to keep shouting, "Don't waste your water."
Oh, and you want me...
Yes, thousands of people visit this city zoo every day. Hang this parrot up at the main entrance.
Gad, he'll be a talking billboard, Mayor, for your water campaign. Where is this parrot?
He's right outside, sitting in my sandhog helmet.
Make up your mind. You've got 2 hats out there. Let us know.
I'll bring him in. Wake up, Oscar. Don't waste your water. Don't waste...
Gad... This is amazing. Why, this bird talks better than Benny, but not much.
Don't waste your water.
Mayor, you're a genius.
That's what I keep telling him down at the office.
And what do they say?
They just laugh and resign. Don't waste your water. Vote for fusion. Vote for fusion.
I thought Oscar here was only taught water slogans.
Well, you know, he ad-libs a little. Well, I gotta get along. I'm dedicating a new pool room uptown. I've gotta throw out the first eight ball.
Well, just give your parrot to my head keeper on the way out, Mayor. We'll take very good care of him.
See that you do, Alan. If anything happens to my parrot, I'll tear this zoo apart.
Huh? And the mayor ain't kidding. Look what he did to Sixth Avenue.
Now, don't worry, Mayor. As the chorus girl said when the millionaire was dying, leave everything to me.
Okay, come on, Oscar.
Okay, Bill. Don't waste the water.
Yeah, that bird is almost human, nurse. He'll save millions of gallons of water. Yeah, the phone again. Dr. Allen's Animal Clinic.
Keeper Wilkins reports, sir. Can I go home? I don't feel good.
What's wrong, Wilkins?
I'm not seeing spots in front of my eyes.
You're not seeing spots? Well, then you're okay. There's nothing wrong.
But I'm looking right at a leopard.
And it's negative vertigo. Lie down. You'd better lie down at once, Wilkins.
Say, doctor. I'll lie down here in the leopard's cage.
Okay. If you're not there in the morning, we'll fluoroscope the leopard and see how you are.
Thank you, doctor.
Oh, doctor, the elephant in cage, too, has a headache.
Order two truckloads of aspirin immediately,
yes,
nurse.
Doctor.
Do that.
Dr. Allen!
Nymphius, my head keeper. Did the mayor give you his propaganda parrot, Oscar?
Yes, that parrot just got loose and bit three seals before we got him back in his cage. One of the seals is so scared he's got hiccups. What'll it do, doctor?
There's only one way to stop a seal's hiccups, Nymphius. You have got to show the seal something it likes.
Something it likes?
Yes. Now take this Republican booklet here. Turn to page 4.
Will that stop the seal's hiccups?
Yes. It's a picture of Hamilton Fish.
Oh.
Hurry, Nymphia.
Hamilton Fish, oh boy.
Confound that mayor's parrot. He might have killed our best seal. Herman was the good housekeeping seal of approval last month. Oh, that phone. Hello?
Keep a Lunch reporting from the hippopotamus house.
Yes, Lunch. Have you removed the tartar from the hippopotamus's teeth as I ordered?
Only the front teeth, Doc.
Well, continue on back into the hippo's mouth and scrape those wisdom teeth.
Not me. Supposing the hippo bites off my arm?
Ridiculous. A hippopotamus doesn't eat meat.
He can taste it and spit it out, can't he?
We'll know as soon as you finish those back teeth. Now get busy, Lunch.
Okay, Doc.
Cad, what is an arm where science is concerned?
Dr. Allen!
Nymphius, are you back again?
Yes, it's that confounded parrot, Oscar. He saw a water buffalo wasting water.
Yes?
He screamed at the buffalo and busted a blood vessel.
A broken blood vessel?
Yeah.
This calls for a transfusion. Nurse?
Yes, Doctor?
Prepare my desk here for an emergency operation. Get 2 pints of parrot blood out of the blood bank.
Right, Doc.
Gad, Oscar dying. If the mayor hears about this, I'll be a White Wings before sundown.
Dr. Allen, what's this I hear about my parrot?
Mayor LaGuardia, how did you get back here so fast?
Speed is the keynote of my administration, Allen. But don't change the subject. What's happened to Oscar?
Well, an unfortunate...
It's worse than I thought. If you don't save that parrot, Allen, I'll settle you quicker than I settled the subway strike.
Now, calm down. Calm down, Your Honor. I am preparing for an emergency operation. Nymphius.
Yes, Doc.
Where is the patient now?
Oh, Oscar's outside, Doc. I'm using a copy of Esquire for a stretcher. I'll carry him in. Here he is, Doc.
Don't waste your water.
Poor Oscar. He's as pale as a dove.
Now, I'll save him, Mayor. Prepare the patient for surgery, nurse.
Yes, Doc. Up we go on the operating table, Oscar. Up.
Hey, put me down easy. I'm a dead pigeon.
Quiet, parrot.
Shut up, crow. Send me to the polyclinic, somebody.
Now be calm. Be calm, Oscar. I'll pull you through, old boy. Just relax.
Get away from me, you quack.
Oscar.
You lay a hand on me and I'll sue. Get me a cheap lawyer, somebody.
Quiet, you... You emerald buzzard.
That's slander, Alan.
You tell him, Mayor.
Yes,
Quiet.
Sir.
This is the clinic, gentlemen. Please. He's a nurse.
Ready, Doctor.
Oh, hey, if you get that thing off of my beak, don't waste your heart. Don't waste.
Good. He's asleep. I'll give him the transfusion. Antiseptic.
Antiseptic.
Swab.
Swab.
Mandel.
Mandel.
Hypodermic.
Hypodermic.
No!
There we are, Your Honor. The transfusion is completed.
Well, will Oscar live, Doctor? Will he talk? I need him for my water campaign.
When Oscar comes out of this ether, he'll talk as well as he ever did.
If he doesn't recover, Alan, you're through.
Oscar will be his old self, Mayor. I've replaced the blood he lost with the best parrot blood available. You can read the label on his container here.
For parrot emergencies. Taken from parrot at the Bronx Zoo.
Exactly. The Bronx Zoo is a branch of this zoo, Mayor. A Bronx parrot is just as healthy as your parrot. I told you, Oscar is coming, too.
That Bronx blood must have done the trick.
It sure did. Speak up, Oscar. Tell the mayor you're all right.
Don't wasting your water!
So if a voice with a handlebar mustache calls you up some Wednesday evening and asks what program you're listening to, you just say...
The Fred Allen Show.
And then when they ask who sponsors the program, well, you say...
The makers of Ipana and Sal Hepatica.
Well, that's about all they'll want to know. But say, if their voices sound as though they're the least bit grouchy, or if they're feeling logy and under the weather, you can do them a good turn by adding...
And what's more, Sal Hepatica is a mighty important thing to remember when...